Hello, and welcome to Peter's Podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. So here we are in 2019. Welcome. I started 2019 with a little bit of a cold, so you'll have to excuse the minimized mellifluousness. Boy, that's two weird adjectives strung together. But I thought I would start 2019 with a bit of a mono podcast. I love to bring other people in to chit-chat and share their wisdom. Today, you only get my wisdom, or my chit-chat, as the case may be. So the theme that I wanted to begin with was something that occurred to me as I was meditating on things. The nature of our Januaries is often about the idea of a New Year's resolution or something that we want to do. At Ishta, we speak about sankalpa, or a deep intention. And the notion of the sankalpa is that you are trying to align yourself with what is your karma, what's your best thing to do. And the way I just said those two things sounds like they can be in contrast with each other, because usually the best thing we can do, we get into this realm of thinking that, well, what I want to do is the best thing for me to do. How can I get to do the thing that I want to do? Well, I can affirm that, etc. And I spoke a fair amount about that on the podcast about miracles, so I don't want to repeat myself. But the idea that brought me here today, that came in meditation this morning, was the distinction between karma and what we want. And I thought I would tackle it first from the angle that I hear about it most from, which is this idea that things that are going on in my life, they don't seem fair. It's not fair that this happens, or it's not fair that she's doing this. It's not fair that so-and-so is in charge. I like to watch the show Madam Secretary, and in fact, I like to watch a lot of shows that are sort of alternate takes on what could be going on if something were different. Aaron Sorkin likes to do that as a sort of way, I think, to present an alternative reality or an alternative way we could be taking things on. And so in doing so, he's beloved by a lot of liberals and detested by a lot of conservatives, since that's usually his way of thinking about how it could be different. But Madam Secretary is taken to literally taking on current events and spinning them in an alternative way. Maybe that's just the producer, Morgan Freeman's way of saying, hey, you know, there's another way this could be going on. But, you know, there's not really another way that things are going on. Things are going on the way they're going on. And they're not fair. They don't seem fair because they're not fair. Life is not fair. And maybe life will sometimes be fair, but it's never been fair so far. There's not, life is not fair, but it's always karmic, was the thought that occurred to me. And in order to say much more about that, I think I need to talk a little bit about what do the terms mean. And karmic is a term that's really got a lot of baggage attached to it. And ultimately, karmic or karma is about cause and effect, and the primary cause of things was the Big Bang. And so we're in an evolutionary emerging or an expanding energetic event that yoga calls karma. And within that gigantic universal karma, each of us ends up with a little piece of karma, a little piece of unfolding that takes place over the course of a lifetime. And within that course of our lifetime, we also do a number of things that have an effect. So each time we do something, it creates an effect. We are born as a result of something that took place, and we are the effect. And anything we do now going forward is going to have an effect. So in a way, the Big Bang set up the preconditions for us to be born, and now we are doing what we're doing, and everything that's going on is sometimes having an effect that gets dealt with immediately. You know, like I knock something over because I'm being not conscious of how I'm walking, and the effect is the thing just shattered on the floor. Right? Or I might do something that years from now comes up to haunt me. You know, I was just listening to a podcast about the Donald Trump's challenges legally, but not the ones in the Mueller investigation. And the reporter, David Fahrenthold from the Washington Post, said, you know, all of these things were done, many of these things were done before Trump was president. And had he not run for president, had he never won, they might never have been issues. But because of the scrutiny that's applied to the president, the things that he did that were legal have now come out in front of him. Right? They're now in the courts. So those things from the past have now had an effect in the president's life. So for us as people trying to live life in a meaningful way, to find happiness, to find contentment, to find deeper meaning, all of those things that I like to talk about in the podcast. For us, the fact that there's karma going on is really important because we have to look at each level of the karma that's going on. The karma that brought us here in the first place, we can't do too much about that, right? You were born where you were born, to the parents you were born to, in the family you were born in, and with the genetics that you have. And so those things, they're pretty much fixed in our timeline as past, right? So they've passed. We can't really change the past. But within this moment where we find ourselves in the moment, we can make lots of changes, right? We can do lots of actions. So when we think back on all the stuff of our past, and we go, you know, it just wasn't fair because I was born to parents who didn't know what to do with me. That makes for a wonderful story, you know, and perhaps you could write a novel about that. And maybe the novel would sell, and then you'd be so excited about the fact that your novel sold, and you would forget all about how unfair that thing was in the past, because now you just were successful about a novel. But the fact is, the past didn't change and the unfairness didn't change, right? But your story around it now is different Now you're thinking of it as, well, that was the story I wrote my book about. And my book is a great thing, so I'm happy, right? So the things there, they only have relative relationship within you, in your story, in your mind. The karma, though, is just going on. It's continuing. The karma doesn't stop. There was a fun line in one of John Lennon's last songs where he said, life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans. And that's a really nice description of karma. You know, it's just what's going on. It's life. This podcast is a little like having tea with me. I have to keep stopping and having a sip of tea. So when we say something is unfair, we're describing our interpretation of the way that the karma is unfolding. To say it's unfair is to imply that somehow or other there's a boss or a judge or a writer that is making the stuff happen. And it should be fair. It should take into account everyone's feelings and everyone should get the same amount and all of that kind of stuff. And it's kind of fascinating because politically speaking, I lean way, way over in that direction. But I don't think that life is providing that, but people could be providing that. So in other words, life isn't fair, but because it's karmic, we could take actions that bring about fairness in life. And at the same time, because life is karmic, our actions that try to do that may or may not be successful. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't take them, because they might be successful. And perhaps that's our whole purpose for being here. So we can choose a particular realm of influence, right? A zone in which we can make a difference, take actions that we think lead to fairness, and then see if we brought about fairness, and if not, continue to tweak that and see if we can bring about fairness. So a big example of where that's going on right now is there's this giant fight between the liberal side politically and the conservative side politically, and they each have a different idea of how should we be participating in influencing the distribution of resources in the country, since politically we're talking about a country. And as I said, I lean way in the direction of we should be doing a lot in order to help redistribute the resources of people in the country so that everyone gets something, whether they were in a position to get paid a lot or they were not. I think that's fair. Currently, though, the country is being run by people who have the opposite opinion. The prevailing governors, right? Senators, president, governors, etc., believe in a different way of doing things. They think that you deserve what you worked for. Whatever you earned, that's what you deserve. And they don't take so much into account any extenuating circumstances, any prejudices of the system, any laws on the books that lean things in a certain direction. And so they think it's fair that people who don't do well in the system don't get paid. And they think it's fair that some people make more and some people don't. So that's just their interpretation. That's their story. Because remember, being fair is a story. So if you don't like the story, you can work on the thing and your actions will have an effect because life is karmic. Right? Whether you think life is fair or not is going to depend on your perspective. What seems fair to some people will seem unfair to other people because fairness is relative. To start in the new year, we did at Ishta some meditation that is called Arohan, Au Arohan, and it's a beautiful practice. The practice gets at a core idea in Samkhya philosophy and in yoga. The Samkhya philosophy is like a description or a cosmology of how we come into being. Why are we here? How are we here? Perhaps more how are we here than why are we here. The idea is that there's a distinction that forms within the wholeness of what is. And at the individual level, at the human person level, that expresses itself as Purusha, or the knowing, and Prakriti, which is the stuff of what we are. And in that we have a consciousness and then a field of which we are conscious. And the consciousness is both conscious of the big whole and also of our individual goings-on. So it's literally like the power of knowing things. And in this Samkhya philosophy, within that first initial splitting of consciousness and the stuff to be conscious of, we have an individuality. And then that becomes our like badge or our role as we move through living. And it's useful because it gives us something to do. We're it's like different from someone else, so we can do something, and then that doing of something has an effect, which gets us back to this notion of karma. Right? So I do something, and then it has an effect in relationship to someone else. And the way that we do the things that we do falls into a spectrum that in yoga is called the gunas. It's a crazy word, G-U-N-A-S. And in this gunas realm, the Sanskrit word is a tattva. The gunas are tattvas. And they are like the finer forces of nature. How does nature express? So the gunas are kind of like elements. Right? What are the elements or the building blocks of what we experience in the universe? And the gunas are considered as qualities of energy. So In this model of being, we have the things that are we're going to experience. We have this consciousness, Purusha, that's going to experience things. And we have, and now an energy, gunas, of making all these things move. so that there's a dance, there's a play, there's something going on. The gunas have two major qualities that are like a cycle, like a energetic pulse. Rajas, which is active, and tamas, which is withdrawing. And if you've ever seen an oscilloscope, even in a movie, it's got like a wave form that goes up and down and up and down and up and down. And this is a pictorial description of this same idea, rajas and tamas. Sometimes it's above the line, sometimes it's below the line, and it just keeps going up and down. Right, so we have in our world a vibratory quality, and everything in the world is vibrating. And rajas and tamas are the poles of the vibration. The Bhagavad Gita comes along and talks about rajas and tamas as these two different qualities of energy. And it talks about the third of the gunas, which round out the story of the gunas and how we can work with them and why we even care about this idea. And in the Gita, we describe the gunas as being rajas, or fiery, or aggressive, or determined, all of the qualities of action. And we talk about tamas as being darkness or stupidity or lethargy, all of the qualities of not doing. And this third quality, sattva guna, as being a balanced way of acting, clear, thoughtful, considerate, effective. So whereas rajas is often considered like hot-headed or overly dramatic or working in a way that's forceful, sattva is a way of working that's not those things, that is in balance. So it sets up a third way, because usually we only think of doing or not doing. But suddenly we have a way that's doing, but in balance, or not doing, but in balance, in addition to these other two poles. So the idea of it is quite beautiful, because it provides us a way of staying in a neutral while in action or in inaction in living. The Gita is quite elaborate then about applying this idea of this three ways of nature, and giving examples of, okay, so what does this look like? Who is like this? Right? So it might give, for example, the warrior caste, because the book was written at a time when there were still caste, there's still the caste system in India. And the warrior caste is by its nature rajasic. So if one is rajasic in nature, it would be natural to be a warrior, where you're going off and fighting and being, you know, powerful and active and strong, and perhaps acting from a place of abandon into that. A tamasic person might be a drunkard, right? Someone who's trying to not do, to be withdrawing from the things that one needs to do by any means. So any kind of moving away. And a sattvic person might be someone who is practicing moderation, someone who is practicing calmness, someone who is practicing thoughtfulness, viveka, clarity, being able to see things as they are. and working within that realm. So they name, because there's still the caste system, the Brahmins as being someone who is sattvic in nature. And these were the people who were learned and studying yoga and doing the rituals and all of that kind of thing. Right? So that was in the day of the Gita. And since we don't have the caste system now, we don't confine people to the caste that they were born into. And so we can use a more broad description of who and when might one be in these various gunas, and do we even care? And I would contend that we care very much, because to live in a way that is sattvic in nature will be equivalent to living gracefully through whatever life throws your way, whatever the karma dictates, whatever results are expressing in front of you. If you are sattvic, you can take them on in the most effective way. And not only effective in terms of outcome, like you're going to get the good result to happen, but sattvic will bring you the effective way in terms of your own dealing with it, right? So you will be able to take on a challenge, not get caught up in, oh, life is so unfair, right? Which gets to our discussion earlier. But rather to say, how do I deal with this? What needs to get done? How do I take care of it? And you do it, right? So that's your go-to when you're sattvic is, what's actually happening? What does this have to do with me? How can I take this on? Do I need some help? You're practical about it rather than reactive about it, right? Rather than letting the emotion of it overwhelm you, you might have an emotional reaction, but then you get to it, right? You deal with it. Mm-hmm. The emotion doesn't end up owning you. So then a rajasic response to the same thing is not something you'd want to have, because it will bring about more response from others that is going to just make the thing worse, right? That is going to exacerbate the situation, right? An example might be someone comes at you and they're angry, and if you can maintain a sattvic relationship with this, you might be able to see what's going on, why are they like that, why are they upset, how can I deal with this? You know, maybe you elicit the help of someone else, all the things that we said a moment ago. You would take all of that into account with that, right? If instead your reaction is, get the fuck out of my face, you know, and you start yelling at them, then the next thing that happens is you're suddenly in a big fight, okay? So there's that. If you're tamasic about it instead, this withdrawing energy instead, then you might just say, ugh, I'm out of here. Right? And then you don't deal with the thing, and then maybe it was something that you needed to deal with, right? And if you didn't deal with it, maybe it got dealt with in a really bad way, and you didn't have a say, right? You're no longer engaged in the discussion, right? So it could be that. It could be that this person really needed your help, and you weren't there. So there's that. It might be that what you did in order to not deal with it was really destructive for you. And because you didn't deal with it, that wasn't good, right? So it's useful to cultivate the sattvic state, to be a person of sattva guna, which doesn't mean you can't do anything. It doesn't mean you can't have fun. It doesn't mean you can't get sad sometimes. It doesn't mean that you can't get angry sometimes. It doesn't mean anything except that you're looking for the balance point all the time. There was this statement, this poetic way of explaining the razor's edge, right? Of being both in the world, of the world, and also transcendent of the world. And so that's what you're looking for. How can I maintain my joyful living in the world, the wonder of life, and also be, you know, dealing with what's challenging about the world, not to just be floating outside the world, not to be so engrossed in how awful things are that I'm upset all the time, but to be walking an edge of balance within it all. Right? And then you're just doing the best you can, not denying that any of this is going on, not repressing any of what's going on, but be effective. The gunas. I've had the pleasure of working with a meditation app called Inscape over the past couple of years. And the voice of the app is Bianca Rothschild, who took a meditation training with me a few years ago. And lately I've been working on a script for a piece they're doing on gratitude. And it's been really fascinating for me to study up on the research results on people who use gratitude as a practice and test it. It's part of the realm of positive psychology that emerged in the 1990s. Before that, psychology was primarily focused on what's wrong with people. How do we fix people who are sick or insane or having mental difficulties? The positive psychology movement started saying, you know, what about actualizing? How about finding out how we can make people happier? So there are quite a number now of happiness researchers, and they find that practicing gratitude is super valuable for your general outlook on life, your effectiveness at work, your sleep, and so forth. So I definitely recommend you look into the Inscape app if you're interested in an app that helps with meditation practices. It's quite a cool setup there. But if you'd like to just try a little gratitude practice, you could do the most simple one, which is a journaling practice. And in that practice, you take three things each day that you're grateful for, something that happened over the course of the last day, and just note what that thing was, and you can make it even more powerful by saying why that was of value to you, so it sort of makes it a little more real. And jot those three things down each day, and it starts to reprogram your outlook on life, because you start to have Sean Acor, one of the researchers, called a background app. Your mind starts to pay attention during the day because it knows you're going to have to write these three things down. So it starts looking at your life for things to be grateful for. And I've been playing with that one myself and found it extremely warm and fuzzy and lovely. So you might give that a shot. So it's been quite wonderful having the podcast for this past year and plus. It's certainly one of the things I'm grateful for, and I'm grateful for everyone listening to the podcast, and I'm especially grateful to the words that I've heard from various ones of you who I see in person in New York, and who I get notes from online about how the podcast has been valuable in your life. So I'm truly grateful that you're listening. I'm grateful that I have the opportunity to share insights and inspirations with you. I'm outrageously grateful to those of you who support me on Patreon because it makes doing this feasible in our world where we have big rents in New York City. So thank you so much, and I wish you all a very happy New Year. Namaste.